So, welcome Luke to this exploration into the source material. Today we're diving into the Synthesizer Chronicles, and it is quite the journey. We're going from the early sonic landscapes of the 1920s straight through to the AI-driven future of sound design.
Yeah, it really is a wild ride. I mean, you might be used to hearing these sounds in EDM or pop, but the journey to get there was essentially this massive philosophical battle over engineering and art.
Right, because if you take a piano and strip away the wood and the strings, you just get a logic grid.
Right.
But since they started as pure chaotic electricity.
Exactly. I mean, early 20th century inventors were basically just trying to harness the hum of vacuum tubes. But the real turning point was in the 1960s with two guys who had completely different visions, Robert Moog and Don Buchla.
Right, and Moog slapped a piano keyboard on his synth.
He did. It was like a Trojan horse. He took this radical, terrifying technology and hid it inside an interface that, you know, everyone already understood.
Wait, but I've always wondered, wasn't that actually kind of a mistake?
How do you mean?
Well, by slapping a 14th century keyboard onto 20th century tech, didn't Moog just box us in?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Buchla was doing these weird touch-sensitive plates that totally ignored the standard 12-note rule.
That is the big tension, yeah. Buchla made it truly electronic, but Moog won the market because he gave people a bridge to the familiar.
Right.
And then Wendy Carlos used Moog's machine to play Switched on Bach. That proved it wasn't just a noise machine for sci-fi, it was a legitimate musical instrument.
But it still forced electricity to behave like a Victorian-era piano.
Yeah, it really did.
So then we have the 1980s, and the grid becomes digital data. We get things like the Yamaha DX7.
Oh, yeah. The 80s shift.
And people call these digital synths cold, but they gave us sounds that analog gear just couldn't touch.
Absolutely. The DX7 used FM synthesis. So instead of filtering a buzzing wave, it uses one mathematical wave to distort another wave so fast that it creates those sharp, metallic, glassy textures.
Beaker mats.
Exactly. And it was perfectly repeatable. That precision is what paved the way for MIDI, the musical instrument digital interface.
Let's unpack MIDI, because I feel like people act like it's just a cable. But really, it was the common language, right?
Indubitably.
It essentially turned music into a text document. It separated the brain from the throat, so you can write the notes on a computer and then pick which synth would speak them later.
Yeah, it completely decoupled the performance from the sound. It democratized production because you didn't need to be a virtuoso to build complex layers.
Right, but here's the irony. As soon as we achieved that perfect digital precision, we started missing the mess.
We really did. We started fetishizing analog warmth.
Which I have to push back on. I mean, isn't analog warmth just a fancy marketing term for unpredictable distortion?
Basically, yes. We became obsessed with gear that doesn't actually do what it's told.
We love a beautiful mistake.
We do. Look at the Roland legacy. The TR-808 gave us the booming kick drum for hip-hop, and then there's the TB-303 with its squelchy bass.
Oh, the 303. That was a total commercial failure at first, wasn't it?
Massive failure. It was designed as a practice tool for guitarists, and it sounded absolutely nothing like a real bass.
So how did it become iconic?
Well, kids in Chicago got hold of them for cheap. They turned the resonance knob all the way up, which essentially makes the filter scream and distort, and accidentally created acid house.
I love that. Roland's engineers were probably horrified, yet it defined a whole decade.
It just goes to show how failures in tech often become the most iconic sounds in music history.
It makes me think modern gear might actually be too good. You know, we're losing the friction. Is that why everyone is going back to modular synths and physical patch cables?
Oh, 100%. I mean, you look at companies like Make Noise with Tony Rolando or artists like Caitlin Aurelia Smith. They are moving away from screams.
We want that tactile energy back.
Yeah, they want to be surprised by the machine again. And that's where the next frontier really gets interesting, AI.
Wait, AI? But if AI is just analyzing every perfect synth patch ever made to generate new ones, where does that leave the artist?
It's a valid concern.
Like, is the human just becoming a curator who picks the best mistake the AI spits out?
Not necessarily. Think of AI as a partner in the workflow. It can suggest a timbre or a texture that a human mind wouldn't naturally arrive at, mostly because we're biased by our own training.
Ah, so it's the evolution of the Moog keyboard. A new way to trick the electricity into doing something human.
Exactly. We've gone from giant vacuum tubes to the infinite precision of digital software, and now we're circling back to the chaos of tactile modularity and AI.
It's a constant search for the soul in the hardware.
That's a great way to put it.
So, Luke, here's a final thought for you to mull over. If AI can eventually replicate the warmth of an old analog circuit and the precision of digital perfectly, does the music actually live in the hardware?
Or is it in the human mistakes we make when we turn the wrong knob at the right time?
Exactly. Maybe the soul of the machine is just us, failing to be as perfect as the technology.